The second monthly meeting of the Port of Port Townsend for January, Wednesday, January the 27th, order. We'll stand for the pledge of allegiance.
The pledge of allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, so we have the agenda. Are there any additions or corrections to the agenda? Okay, I move we approve the agenda.
Second.
All in favor? Aye. Pete?
Aye.
Okay, consent agenda. Apparently, someone wants to pull something out of the approval of warrants. So do we need to, you wanted to make a comment on the warrant? Go ahead.
Oh, Pete, Vigo here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you loud and clear.
Okay. As I understand, there's a warrant to be approved at this meeting for Hillman for a total of a little over $4,000. The problem with that, as I see it, he had a contract that expired December 31st. The maximum amount of that contract for reimbursement was $10,000. And this, with the $4,000 and $4,080 to be exact, that'll put the total amount paid to Hillman for 2015 at $12,802. Can't do that, gentlemen. He doesn't have a contract. Simple as that.
Okay, any other comments on the consent agenda? So with that having been said,
well, actually, yeah, I got a question. I mean, so what he's referring to is Abigail. Do you have any comments on that? I mean,
yeah.
Is that particular invoice that he's referring to, should that be pulled out of warrants until this is resolved?
I know that we saw that it went over contract. We had discussions as to why it went over contract. It was because of the rebidding initially. And then there were some other issues having to redo the bid process, you know, not just the rebidding itself, but then go through the interview process. And then,
so when we do go over a contract in the past, have we normally approved it, or what has been the procedure if we go over contract, like what Vigo is referring to here?
I'm not really aware of that instance in the past. I do know that we did recognize this occurred, and we promptly put together some procedures so that the contracts spend down would be monitored. And so we have a process in place for that to occur now. This one should have had an amended contract.
We have a new contract signed.
Right.
But why don't we just go back and when we look at it again, we'll make it right.
There's also, I don't know the background of the contract, but your delegation of authority has a process for change order. Does it allow the?
Yeah, which I knew up to $25,000.
Correct.
If I'm going to notify the commission at the next regular meeting.
Right.
But does this constitute a change order with the overnight project? If it's classified as that.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with the contract, but we can sure take a look at it and see if the criteria and delegation of authority resolution is satisfied.
So in this case, then, we approve the warrants except for that, minus that one, line until this is resolved?
Up to the limit, the ceiling of his contract, is that what you mean?
Yeah, because if he's still, yeah, we can pay up to that limit and then decide how to proceed with the other $2,000, whatever the number is.
Okay, with that exception on the warrants, I move that we approve the consent agenda.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, public comments not related to the agenda. What's your name?
My name is Carol Tabler.
Carol Tabler. Could you come up here, please?
You betcha. I'm going to do the address thing again. 320 Cook Avenue.
Please speak up, because Mike is having a hard time.
Right, I understand. Pete is in a machine. So, I was concerned about stormwater figures. Didn't find much about it on the website, or the information seemed to be sketchy. I believe we've also had tests in November and January, which are not on the website. So I went to ask Al about that, and he says we are not doing well in the stormwater runoff tests, that the measuring, the concentrations for metals are several times what they should be, and that we have now failed that test six times, which, according to the DOE's rules, requires of us a level three response, which means we have 3 months from the date of that last test, which I believe would have been November. As of November, I believe that we had that situation of having had six failures. So correct me if I'm wrong here. I believe that means that we have to submit an engineering report to the DOE within 90 days of that last failed test to tell them what we're going to do, and then 12 months to actually enact it. So my question to the our administrators is, have we done that? Are we doing that? Do we have a report in the works? Do we have a...
Okay, this is a comment section where you mm-hmm. get the comment.
Okay, then consider it a rhetorical question. All right, or something to take up later. But that is what is in my mind and what is concerning me. There was an article in The Leader today in which Mr. Crockett seemed to be saying that it was primarily the haulouts, the do-it-yourself boaters, who were ignoring the best management practices that were the problem. I would say that this problem has been developing for so long, and there have been so many opportunities to correct it along the way and to enforce those BMPs, that the responsibility for the situation we are now in rests with our administrators. They are the ones who are supposed to oversee. If people do not follow the BMPs, we have plenty of staff that can go out and check on things, make sure people are following this. And it seems that we have not done that, or we would not have this situation. We've got the biochar. The biochar works great, but it can't overcome the amount of pollutants that are running off of our boatyard. And I do not believe that the DOE's standards are either unrealistic or unattainable. I think we could do this if we tried. I actually wonder if we're trying. It seems to me that
our... We have 3 minutes. Wrap it up.
All right. It seems to me that we've been ignoring this problem, specifically our administration has been ignoring this problem. And now we are in a situation where, by rights, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, the DOE could revoke our permit, which expires, is this right, on May 31st? Anyway, but it's possible they could revoke it before that. That's what my research seems to indicate. Thanks very much.
Any other comments?
I'm Bertram Levy. First of all, I want to thank Jim Pivarnik for addressing the parking issue on D-Dock. We walked over there and looked at an area where we, in April, they'll be clearing out the barges and providing parking for Corey and Corey seemed amenable to it. So thanks, Jim, for doing that, following up on that. Secondly, when I was looking at the first reading last of the draft 2016 capital budget, included sale off building, stormwater, maintenance, yard, and Port Hudson breakwater, coming to 595. I didn't see the 150,000 that is going to come due on the ramp expansion. And so wondered why that wasn't in the capital budget. It seems to me that should be included in the figure, which would bring this up to $645,000. I did mention it to Abigail, but in the words of Larry Crockett, I don't think it's up to the taxpayers who don't own a boat to or an airplane to subsidize somebody's hobbity. And I'm sure he would agree that the mortgage tenants certainly cover their expense to over 100,000. And although I've become public enemy number one for the ramp people, I think that the question needs to be asked where that 150,000 is going to come from. And so nobody seems to answer that one.
Okay, you still have a minute and 14 seconds left.
Yeah.
This is comments, so we're not prepared to answer your question until we know what ahead of time what it is, and so we'll come up with an answer.
Good, thank you.
Any other public comments?
Now. It's unfortunate not everyone understands accrual accounting. Melinda Bryden, Woodland Hills. I was pleased to see the praise for Mr. Crockett's long tenure given by both Steve Tucker and Pete Hanke at the last meeting, and again in the newspaper. Mr. Crockett's leadership has been a boon to the port of Port Townsend. Mr. Crockett was quoted in the local paper, and I believe it's a quote worth repeating. And it was, "I don't think it's up to the taxpayer who doesn't own a boat or an airplane to subsidize someone's hobby. It's not rocket science." So after all the praise, it's very disheartening that his experience and wisdom in this one matter has been ignored by two sitting commissioners, Mr. Hanke and Mr. Kleinfelter, regarding the mortgage rate structure. During Mr. Tucker's reelection campaign, a major point was that he was not an insider and so could be trusted not to vote in his own best interests. This resonated with the voters in districts 2 and 3, which Mr. Hanke and Mr. Kleinfelter are supposed to represent. I sit here today to ask if Mr. Hanke and Mr. Kleinfelter are going to continue to vote their personal interests or whether they will step up and do the right thing for their constituents. I believe it is never too soon to begin educating the public for the next election. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other public comments not related to the agenda? Okay. Second reading, these are action items. These are resolutions we brought up last time, and so this has an opportunity to be acted upon today. Resolution 638-16 is delegating authority to port management.
And again, as we said 2 weeks ago, there's no changes to this document from last year. It's exactly the same. So, but it's good to, as Carolyn has provided guidance every year, it's good to readopt it every year just so it's current and there's no doubt, you know, where that authority lies. So recommend you adopt it again.
Okay, I make a motion we adopt resolution 638-16.
I second it.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Okay. Resolution 639-16, commission meeting procedures.
This is another one we do every year. It's required. Commission needs to be very clear with the public exactly when and where your regular meetings will be held. And it also includes the agenda format. Now, we added an item. If you remember, we talked about adding one more item to the agenda format that would just make it a little bit easier for us to add information items. You got it, Sue, if I can't find it on my phone here.
Right, page 19. Thanks. A little transaction.
And what was the title of the game to the other?
Other business.
Other business, number eight.
Other, okay, yeah.
You guys looking at the new rules of transaction of business?
Yeah. And
okay.
VIII, other business, is the one that got added.
And
yeah, I got it.
You know, it may be an NA sometimes if there's anything to present. But it just makes it, it'll help the staff. They're quite often an item will come up where we're not looking for any guidance. We're not looking for a vote by the commission, but we want to make sure it's an item that you're aware of for whatever reason. So minor change, but I think will help with that.
It's a good change. Okay.
And also, we added the a change in a couple of meeting dates, time and location of meetings, item two. The May meeting was changed because that's the spring meeting for Washington Public Works Association. So it was changed to Monday, May 9th, rather than it was scheduled for Wednesday, May 11th. And then the November meeting, since that's Thanksgiving week, was moved to Tuesday, November 22nd.
And that's the same, isn't it? And those are the only
right, those are
maybe, just two meeting dates, and then we added to other business.
Right.
Okay. Any other discussion on this?
No.
I make a motion that we approve resolution 639-16.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Okay, promotional hosting procedures, resolution 640-16.
And again, we discussed this last time, just to make it clear on what our authority is to do such acts. This is something that we've never really done since I've been here. You know, it's more common you see this with the larger ports where they're dealing with overseas shipping lines and that sort of thing. But still, it's good to have these procedures adopted in case the opportunity does come up. It kind of sets what the limits are that I can approve, and essentially $1,000. Once it hits that $1,000, commission needs to approve it. But without going back into our logs, I think the biggest promotional hosting ever approved was a couple of dozen domains. Yeah, so but it's good to have this done and supported.
So no reason not to adopt it.
No. Okay, so I make a motion that we approve resolution 640-16.
Second.
All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Pete. Okay, first reading for discussion only. We have the kayak rack storage rates.
At the last meeting, Mr. Pilgrim came and spoke to the commission about the recent increase that the commission adopted as part of the 2016 rate sheet. And we've been doing a little bit of research, and Commissioner Hankey requested that we put this on the agenda to discuss some more. And I think I've spoken to all of you now about this. We've only really found two other marinas that provide public storage. One is the Port of Kingston, which charges $25 plus leasehold tax, which is 12.84%. It comes out to almost exactly $28, which is what we were charging. Our $28 charge includes the leasehold tax, so it's really comparable. Fort Lovell actually has some kayak storage. They also charge $25, but they don't charge leasehold tax. But they're a private entity, they're not a government entity, where the state law requires that extra tax that we charge. Most of the other facilities that I've been able to find are rowing clubs, private enterprise like that. where they charge a lot more, but they also have more amenities, they'll have clubhouses, that sort of thing. So that's about where we stand on that. And Jim, you want to give a little history on how we got to this point with the rates?
Sure. When we redid Point Hudson, we looked at doing this kayak rack mainly at the encouragement of Pygmy Kayaks. They wanted to have some storage down on the water. We spent almost $200,000 on that to redo on the lower float, the racks, the extra wide float to support all the weight. So we did a quick calculation on what that would cost to be repaid in 20 years. So there's 30 kayak spots at $25 a month. It's $9,000 a year. Over 20 years is $180,000. So that was the kind of the number we came up with. How do we pay for this investment? Because it wasn't something that was in our strategic plan that we were going to provide kayak storage on the water. We did that. Our rate was $29, including leasehold tax, when we first started. And we had probably four or five kayaks that first year. Didn't have a lot of participation. If you remember, Commissioner Collins was an avid rower and wanted to really support that community. So he felt that we should lower the price to 15, which we did in 2010. And it went for 6 years at $15. We raised that rate last year. Mr. Pilgrim is right. We raised it to $20 last year. And
It was $20
last year. And then this year we raised it to the 28. And the reason really is leasehold tax. We only wanted to charge $25, but there's that breaking point at $21.50 where leasehold tax kicks in. It's a state law. So by going to 25, we triggered the leasehold tax law and we have to pay the leasehold tax. So that's where we are right now. If you back out the leasehold tax, our rate is $24.75 per month.
And just so everybody knows, we don't keep the leasehold tax. We collect that on behalf of the state and it goes to Olympia. We use it for whatever Olympia uses money for.
Okay, is there any other discussion on the kayak rack storage rates?
Well, I'll throw a quick comment out. Kind of appreciating Melinda's comments. I hear you, Melinda, what you're saying, and I look forward to having a discussion about that. But I just, I thought Phil made a fairly reasoned argument email in terms of how fast these rates have gone up over the last 2 years. And I actually talked with Jim about this and said, why don't we, at least for a year, eat the leasehold tax? So we would essentially be charging, leave it at $25, and then we would pay the leasehold tax out of that, which would be a net of, I guess, 22 something to us. And then subsequently, if next year or the year after that, we can raise it more to compensate for that leasehold tax. I was just trying to, respect the fact the dollars that we're talking about in terms of the rent amount are not that large compared to the overall budget. And it just seemed like a more reasoned approach to try and step up to what it should be. So that was my only proposal, and that's my only comment.
Well, I concur with what he's saying. It's not unreasonable. It's not going to be a significant impact. And from discussion with Mr. Pilgrim, some other, it sounds like there's some folks that are pretty upset and they're just going to stop using the facility. So,
well, why don't we, this is the first reading. Why don't we, for the next meeting, put together an actual, proposal?
I'd like to make a comment on this too, and that's that I've had a lot of interactions with boat ramp users who have suddenly seen their rates go up 55%. That's a lot more than the kayak rack went up. And when they asked me, knowing that I was a boater, a boat ramp user, they said, "Why are you raising the rates on us so much?" So we can pay for the facility. And they all be quiet after I said that. And they've all understood after I said that. And so I kind of feel that if we keep saying if we keep wanting to tell the taxpayers we're going to charge market rates for the facilities we're building here, we need to actually do it. Or we can just subsidize everybody and then just have everything free, and then we can just not ever do anything anymore. So I personally think that since the rates are comparable with what the other rates are, that that's what the market is. And if I was down there looking, if perhaps we were to add, there's enough room to put another rack or two down there. We could perhaps put another rack or two down there. And then one of the arguments that I had heard from someone was that she had to get the thing for an entire year to be able to have a space in there. And so that made her pay so much money over the, well, maybe if we have more racks down there, she can only rent it for as much as she wants. But we can still charge a fair rate for it. So we may want to consider some other things besides giving away the farm.
Well, let me, my recommendation is let's put this, you know, to the second reading for 2 weeks from now. And I'm going to put together a proposal and the commission can vote on the other.
Okay, any other comments on the first reading? On the kayak racks? Any little kayakers out there, huh? Okay, going to be gathering place proposal.
Sure. Linda Ferris from the Gathering Place, she's the director of the Gathering Place, was here with us tonight along with quite a few people from the Gathering Place. Thank you for coming. We've been meeting for quite a while on coming up with ways to expand their program at Point Hudson. They've been using one side of the duplex. It's worked very well for their program, but they've really outgrown it, and they've grown into another business model that Linda would like to talk to you a little bit about. I think they came up with a really reasonable proposal. I think Linda did a great job of putting together this proposal. And Jim Rozanski, an architect in town here, had put together some site plan drawings for you. So anyway, Linda, I'll turn it over to you.
I really don't want to sit down. I would like to introduce a couple of our staff and participants who came this evening. Jesse Latham is a great dog biscuit cutter, and come on up, Jason. Jesse, I would like you to give out some of these bags. Okay. I want you to take them right around there to Larry.
Yes, Larry.
Thank you very much.
The next one is Brad.
It's not.
I'm curious to know the name of
this. Are you guys eating dog biscuits?
I'm sorry.
We're eating dog biscuits.
Dog biscuits. Sweet Pete is really going to appreciate this.
You aren't here, Pete, but when you come back, when you come to visit Gathering Place, you will get your bag as well.
Well, you got the Maggie, Drew, and Brother.
I'll be there for you.
And I'd also like to introduce one of our chief volunteers, Randy Rosens. He's up here from Texas, and he's just been my right-hand man. He mans our booth where he sells the dog biscuits. He's at our dog biscuit bakery where he assists with the packaging. And we don't have anyone else here from packaging, but also our board member, Gene Yoakum. Thank you for coming. And if you wanted these plans, I can leave them there.
We have some.
Yeah,
okay, you already have them. Okay. These are some ones, so. I thank you for inviting me here and for Jim actually understanding our need at our gathering place, especially our dog biscuit bakery, because we've been at the Skookum building for about 6 or 7 years now, I think, because at our place at Point Hudson, the wiring is not appropriate to plug in a 220 half-size commercial oven. So we were overriding it and going in and plugging in the stove, and that wasn't so good. So when the jump rope company left, they offered to let us use that space. And it was perfect because we have a lot of people who do come to Dog Biscuits. We have volunteers and staff and several participants, maybe as many as 15 that would come that day. And now Skookum really needs that building back. And they notified us maybe several months ago, almost a year ago, that they're going to need that building. And we looked at several other places. However, Gathering Place is privately funded, and we have very little money. We run on a very tight budget. A lot of volunteers keep it going. So in meeting with Jim, we came up with the possibility of using the back side of the duplex of 220, where there's nothing going on, and it's a little bit of a liability. And if we could put that building right in there, then I think it would be good use of the space, and it would be also next to our main location. And
And in addition to the Dog Biscuit Bakery, we are really bursting at the seams in our other classes. Our cooking class and our music class both are very tight in there. So we would move those two groups of activities over to the Dog Biscuit Baking building when we're not having our baking going on. And the 430 Hudson, as it is now, will turn into more of our art studio, our art program, where we fill that up every Tuesday upstairs and downstairs. We started a new weaving program, and we have our more advanced artists and then the people. As you know, we serve those who really have very limited skills, and so they come and then we just do whatever they seem interested in doing. So we've got a lot of people who come to that program, and we would also open it up to the general public for the art program during the week and have open studio. So using that entire space, I don't think will be difficult. You have the proposal. I'm not sure that there's anything else I need to add to that, other than we are going to move into the marine-related dog biscuits. Do you have those?
Yes.
In your pocket? Oh, he thought I gave them to him. I wanted you to see what they were. We've got some already where we make an impression of fish on the dog biscuits, and then we've got some other marine-related. fish and sailboats and starfish and buoys, so we'll be making marine-related biscuits. And we're also looking into making parrot-related biscuits, just for Larry, because
everybody gets a chance to learn.
Parrot loves the biscuits, so there's just a lot that we can expand upon in this new facility.
So what's in them? Can I eat one?
Yes, but don't tell the health department. I have to because that's one reason we started doing dog biscuits years ago, because it's such a good fine motor project for our people, and not only that, they learn other skills like weighing the biscuits and packaging with the labels. There's a skill that fits almost everybody, I will say almost. And we use organic ingredients and the best that we can. We've got 7 flavors, and they're listed on the back of your little bag there, unless it's cheese and bacon, which is usually favorite of the guys. So they're organic, we can eat them. We do test them when they come out of the ovens just to make sure that their flavor is right. And we make salmon biscuits. We get all of our bones and things from local vendors to make our broth. And
so I have a couple questions for you.
Okay.
You indicated that you're going to be using the commercial kitchen one day a week for the dog biscuits. Is that correct? And other times it could be open to the public?
Yes, exactly.
That could be a pretty lucrative thing for the gathering place. If someone was someone planning on being there to manage the openings for the public?
Yes, we would have staff there when they come. And also it would give another avenue for us to train our participants in food prep, food cleaning, things like that. And it will allow us to sell things and not have to say, you know, they're dog biscuits, because you have to have the health department. And so we've debated a long time. We have one of our board members actually ran a deli downtown about 15 years ago. And she's very interested to make that commercial kitchen happen, because we could do things like cheesecakes, simple things.
I know for us at Puget Sound Express, we are often looking for, we have a health approved kitchen on one of the boats, but we also need, you know, a bigger facility from time to time. And I think there's a real market there to, I mean, I know we would be willing to look at utilizing something like that periodically.
That would be excellent. I know there are a lot of people that could use that kitchen and then come to the market and sell their goods. This is such a down-to-earth community where we like to make things.
And then you also said that you could have the public offered or open to go into your art classes, is that correct?
Yes. One of our main missions is to get just the general community to come in to Gathering Place and meet our participants. Once you meet them, you kind of get hooked because their personalities. I think Jesse's still here, but he's made so much progress since he started to come to Gathering Place. It's just the socialization and the interaction with everyone. That continues to be a learning experience for them and for the general public to come in. One of our main things is to relieve the fear that people have when they see people with disabilities. And usually once you get to know them, they're just like ordinary people. And
I think most of you have met my daughter, who always loves to come and shake your hand and whatever, but you know, people are kind of afraid, but once they get to know her, it's like, oh, you know, such a sweetie, who just had cataract surgery about 4 days ago, and for the first time in her life, she is seeing things because she was born with congenital cataracts, and so she, I don't know what the world is going to mean for her now, but that's one reason I decided we needed to start something. I'm an elementary ed teacher. What is needed to do for the rest of her life? And many parents, Elle can attest to this, you know, there's not much for them to do once they get out of the school program, unless they can have some sort of a small job supported, related employment, which might last a couple days, a couple hours a day, and then what do they do for the rest of their day? So it's a very inspiring program. I just think we really need to get more people in there to see what we're doing and help and actually participate.
So do people come there now? I mean, I assume that the art part is going now in yes. the building, and that's what, one day a week?
Yes, it's all day on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm. And so are people lunch. Coming into that, the, you know, the public?
From the public, yes. We have volunteers who come in, and we encourage them to paint right along with our people. It's just like they come in and participate. They don't just oversee what they're doing. We want them to really sit side by side with them. And
I have two questions. One, does the laundry activity go to this building as well?
Did the laundry facility?
No, Pete, the laundry is going to stay here. That's a Skookum activity.
Okay.
It would stay here in the Skookum building.
But they need the space we're in now on the west end.
And then the second question is, the way this building is situated, where, how does a delivery truck get access to it for bringing in supplies? Is it?
Well, there's.
I know where it is.
There's a big enough drive, I think, that we could clear that. Right now we have an oil truck that delivers oil and just comes down the driveway. We try to schedule that when there are no participants or staff there, except maybe one to let them in, because then there are no cars parked. And as I understand, Joanne's former driveway, is wide enough to bring supplies in. Right now we pick up all our own supplies.
So what's your timing? Is there urgency with getting this process going?
If Skookum were here, they would tell you it was urgent.
Yeah.
Yes, we have been working with Jim to get the site plans done. And my husband, Bob, who's on the board also, has been working very hard to get interior things figured out, the lights, the flooring, and the commercial kitchen equipment. We haven't purchased anything yet, but we know what we really need to do, and we just have to finalize those interior plans. And the layout of the commercial kitchen. Aaron Stark would be able to tell us. Also, Bosite Lake has just put in a commercial kitchen out there for the summer camp, if you're familiar with that. And so we're going to go see their kitchen.
And essentially what they're looking for is, you know, something from the Port Commission that we're willing to entertain this, so they can go further in their fundraising, get their design finalized. They get a lot of permitting to do with the city, et cetera. That's all going to take time, so the sooner they can start it, the better, and the sooner we can reach fruition. As with all these sorts of things, we'll at some point have to come back to the commission, because you have the right to approve the final design and make sure it's not going to interfere with other activities on the port. And this sort of activity, just to remind everybody, the Constitution of the state, I think it's Article 8, Section 7. Sometimes I get that backwards.
That's for you.
Yeah. allows governments to provide this sort of service to the infirm. So under that definition, it's qualified. So.
Yeah, well, even though this is a first reading, my inclination is to agree with it.
Mine too.
Hey, Pete, do you have any inclinations?
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, I'm all kind of intrigued when the port can do something kind of unusual, you know, with what we do, and I think this is definitely fits into that category. Yeah, I'd like to see it go further.
So is there a need for this to go to a second reading?
Well, I think that it'd have to come to as a second reading would be when it got became approved, I think, right?
What we would do next is, if you're all and I hear this, you don't have to vote on it, we'll draw up a draft lease document and present it at the next meeting. And you can approve the draft lease.
All right.
And that would allow this to move forward. You know.
That gives them an actual document from us to take to the city so they can start the permitting and that sort of thing. So, and also give, you know, possible funders
exactly
a little bit of surety that
yeah, we're anxious to start addressing that and going to speak to several people. We already, I think I mentioned in the proposal that I already know one foundation that's a very private foundation that found us last year, and I'm sure that they're going to support us with this.
And if, you know,
not totally, but you
sure
know.
And feel free, if any of those individuals or foundations have questions, tell them, you know, they're welcome to call Jim or I to get details.
Okay, that would be fine. And I don't, do you have anything else, Jim?
No, I think if you're, are you going to do a letter or a, it would be helpful to incorporate, I think, that section of the state law that allows you to do this. You know, because I ran into some resistance when I was at the city, this was way last summer. I talked to them, oh, you can't do anything down there unless it's marine related, you know, kinds of issues, but I'd like to be able to put those to bed.
That also seems
I'll
like
talk to my counterparts. Not that that will help, but.
But it's a great opportunity for the marina, the boaters in the marina also, because I know you have several convention type things where same kind of boat comes in, you know, because we don't use that facility generally at night. We will be having something like dances in the afternoon where we would invite people to come in, because now it's a really wide open space where we can plan several things. It's very exciting for us to be able to think about doing this and how we can really get our budget increased so that we can add more staff and do more things. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Potential action items, we have none. So we are to staff comments now.
Carol, anything?
Happy to be here. Thanks.
There we
go. I just wanted to respond to Bertram's comment earlier about the boat ramp. He came in to see me about that as it's regarding the draft capital budget for 2016. We didn't originally put it in there because it's not a new project. And I'm not sure about the $150,000 where that comes from, but we'll have more solid numbers in a few weeks. So, and we'll, you know, disclose that in a public meeting.
Once we're all done with the project, and I don't know if you noticed, but the first of the concrete slabs appeared late this afternoon after being stuck at the Kingston Ferry for most of the day. But once we're all done with the project, Abigail says she's going to put together a complete spreadsheet, you know, accounting for every penny where it came from.
Okay.
That's
all I have.
Okay.
Thank you.
Since it's my screw up, let me. I'll follow this order.
We have a change order.
We have a change order in the boat ramp, $5,600. It is totally my fault, and I'll take the blame. I ordered 70 feet of dock, and we really needed 95 feet of dock. So when they put the piles in, we realized the error and went back to the manufacturer of the docks. They hadn't started production yet. So the original contract was for $34,000. The new contract is for $39,800. That's all I got.
Yeah, there's no change to the design or the plan. It's just, you know, the error in the order, it's, you know, calculating the footage. The tight kit came in and noticed that the, you know, the piles are driven properly. they need one more 20-foot section. And one other section had to have 5 feet added to it. And we're still well within the budget, so. Once again, Steve, I got another email this afternoon. The NODC meeting was canceled. Several members are going to Olympia to testify on a number of things of the legislature in session. Speaking of that, next Tuesday I'll be in Olympia at WPPA. We had a teleconference with WPPA at the Porterville lockup. Abigail, Jim, Al, and I were on our end. Remember, I briefed you about this attempt. We're trying to get two demolition sites in the state for derelict vessels, one here at Puget Sound, one down in Columbia. And talking to Jerry O'Keefe from WPPA, who does the environmental stuff, we suggested that he get DNR and get a meeting where we could all come together. So they're going to host it at the WPPA headquarters with DNR to kind of look at the next steps. Knowing Olympia and how the legislature works, this is a short session this year, and they're totally consumed with the education issue. You know, they're under the court order from the Supreme Court to fix it. And they're really not entertaining any new budgetary items, but we've got some ideas where it might not be new money. But I still think this year would be kind of a teeing up year where we kind of introduce the topic to the legislature. Then next year, which will be the long session where the big budget issues and new money things come up, you know, hit it hard next year. But we got to get our act together, make sure DNR is on board and make sure their concerns are addressed. So I'll have more after that meeting next Tuesday. Just a reminder, the boat show starts this week. I don't know if you all got a chance to see our new booth. We had it set up in the lobby there for a couple of days. We went over yesterday to be set up in Seattle. And feel free to, if you need, if you hand out tickets already, commissioners. Okay. So I'll be going on. I'll be there Wednesday. And then Thursday is the, it's all the leadership conference for the Washington Boating Alliance. I'll be there for a couple of hours. And then Abigail and I will be pulling a couple more hours in the booth on Thursday. And the last thing is it looks like we're go for next Friday, the 5th, not this Friday, but next week, for a special meeting for executive session to discuss personnel issues. So that'll be at 9 o'clock, right? Yeah. That's all I have.
Okay. Any public comments? Here you go.
A couple comments. One, Steve, you mentioned about additional rack storage for the kayaks. I'm not a kayaker myself, but I think it'd be a great idea. When I've been down there previously, there's a fair amount of extra room. I don't know when the boat show if you remove some of those, but if we can get more racks down there, that's more dollars toward meeting that goal of 200,000 over 20 years. I think that's great. So I think that's a good idea. Next comment, I'll preface it by saying, Mr. Hillman, I have nothing against Mr. Hillman. I don't even know the guy. I've seen him here, so my comments here don't think that there's any disparaging remarks about Mr. Hillman or what he can do. But as I review this contract, and I ask you commissioners to review it, there's no specific performance requirements in this contract. Anyone doing this type of consulting work is normally expected to have certain specific performance criteria. And when he submits his invoices, it's just so many hours for the month of October or May or whatever, but there's no daily reports, no listing of the days that he was on site, where he went, what he did, no photographs. And if, as a for instance, side business, if you're, any of you were to build an expensive yacht and you hired an ABS consultant, he would provide photos, he would provide a daily log. You would know exactly what he did for you on your ticket. And this contract shows nothing. And there's nothing to go back through the invoices to show you what you got. If you go to down to Don's Pharmacy and you buy something, you get an invoice, shows you what you got. I don't know how you get by state auditor with no documentation. Abigail, what can I say? So that's what I like. The other thing, there's no hourly rate stated. His hourly rate stated of $85 an hour. That's not a bad rate, no problem with that. But it isn't stated here. He could charge $185. And there's no insurance requirement. Yes, there's an indemnification clause, but when a consultant's on the job site, he should have insurance himself so that the port is absolutely not liable or is covered for his errors and omissions. Performance criteria. That's all it boils down to. Thank you.
What Vigo is describing there is something that I fully concur with, that you should have a project management plan in place that identifies things like what he's mentioning is documented, making sure that there's nothing missed or misplaced for that matter. And that, an opportunity for everybody to be able to follow the project and understand what stage it's at and all the items that need due diligence completed.
Any other public comments?
Did I get to ask questions, Matt?
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Did I get to ask questions, Matt?
Well, this is for comments. So we're here to listen to what you have to say.
I'll pass. Thank you.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. What was your name?
I'm Brooks Towns.
You are?
Brooks Towns.
Brooks Towns?
Yeah, do you want me up there or not?
Yes, well, yeah. If you want to be heard by Pete, yeah.
Okay.
Hi, Brooks.
Hi, Pete. The only thing I'd like to mention is if it's still open to do that, is about the kayak racks, which I think are a pretty good idea, but kayaks and the boats, the rest of the boats that use Port Hudson are not a real good mix. I kept my Sea Dory down there last summer and came out several times and had to do some fairly fancy stuff to keep from running over somebody in a kayak. And I wondered if more kayaks couldn't be more economically accommodated if they were up on the grass or someplace else and perhaps launched off the beach instead of into that harbor, or perhaps the near the entrance kayak racks by at the RV area near the entrance of the harbor, so they didn't have to go the length of the harbor to get in and out. It's just something I hope you consider. Thanks.
Well, I would just add, going in and out of Point Hudson with big boats, that brings up a really good point, because when a kayaker comes around the entrance at Point Hudson, there's usually about a 3-second period before we can hit the reverse. So, yeah, it's not a bad idea.
That would be a fairly significant investment in infrastructure to move all that.
Yeah. That's the dock that's low so that the kayaks can get off and on easily, and that's like what does the whole back end. I mean, you have to make a whole new dock there, and I'm not sure how that can work.
Well, this was, Peter, you'll remember when they designed the Maritime Center, because I believe you were on that review committee. That was the reason they have all the boat storage at the Maritime Center, but it is cost prohibitive to be in the Maritime Center, but that gets you totally out of the marina and gets you right on the beach there. We thought that was a great idea, but it's pretty expensive to keep your boat there.
Yeah, no, I can certainly see the merit of not having to come out of the entrance, but at the same time, too, you know, anytime there's a southeaster blowing, it's nice to have that protected area to paddle around in.
Okay, any other public comments? I'm sorry, go ahead.
I'm Randy Rosens. I'm with Gathering Place, and I really just want to thank the commission for its initial overwhelmingly positive response to their proposal. I came here from Austin 4.5 years ago for a weekend, and here I am, I'm a live aboard in Boat Haven. And part of what I love about this community is it's very inclusive, forward thinking towards all elements of the community. So I think it's wonderful that you guys are embracing this concept, and I can assure you that it's gonna just continue to add value, not only to Gathering Place, but to the community as a whole. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other public comments? Go ahead.
I'm Phil Pilgrim. I just want to thank the commission for giving additional consideration to the kayak rate increase, and also to address the traffic, the kayak traffic in Port Hudson and at the entrance. Especially around the entrance, I think perhaps some signage to educate kayakers about the proper way to enter and exit Point Hudson would be helpful. I know a lot of people, they just kind of come around the corner, and obviously it's better if you go out a ways so you can see what's coming out or coming in. And so maybe some signage to that effect would be helpful. I don't think that kayakers as a whole try to get in the way of power boaters. They're just perhaps a little bit ignorant about what the proper procedures are. And I think if they knew what the procedures were, that would be very helpful. So it might be less conflict. I know from Pygmy kayak standpoint, when customers come to try out the kayaks, they are not allowed to go outside Point Hudson. So having that calm water on the inside is very essential. And I would hate to see the low dock go away. I mean, it's just a great place to launch a kayak. So that's all.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I've got a few comments. Any more public comments? Okay, commissioner comments. Brad?
I was just wondering if what's the possibility of getting the update on what Ms. Taylor would have brought up earlier in regards to what's our current stormwater situation?
Yeah, why don't we make that a workshop agenda and get out of here and okay. Give us an update.
Yeah, I guess
we're good. Yeah, we've been at level 3 response for a long time. So all the engineering is
good here.
I'll just comment on Phil Pilgrim commenting about kayaks going in and out. I mean, you know, middle of the summer, there's a lot of boat traffic happening in and out of Point Hudson, and I have yet to ever hear of a kayaker and a boat having an incursion. I mean, the only one I've ever heard of was Steve Chapin, who actually was in his rowing shell, and he collided with another rower. So that's the only one I've ever heard of. So all in all, I think Phil's right. I mean, I think for the most part, everybody's really good about going in and out and being really cautious with the kind of that blind turn there at the entrance.
I think putting some signage maybe down where the racks are too, just reminding them 2 or 3 times, you know, of the environment they're operating in. So we'll take a look at that.
Sounds a good idea. Perhaps we could also include keeping divers out of the channel in the Point Hudson. I've actually come in with my boat.
Yeah, they shouldn't be in the channel.
I've almost had a problem, but it would be good to have that.
As
I made the bend, there was a diver right in front of us.
That's not smart.
No. Okay.
Yeah.
So the next meeting will be a public workshop that we have scheduled for Wednesday, February the 10th at 9:30 in the morning, after which we'll have a meeting at 1 o'clock. And there's no executive session today?
Not today, but just a reminder, we will have the special meeting on the 5th.
Oh,
executive session, right, with the personnel issue.
The executive, the special meeting on the 5th is going to be just an executive session for personnel. So this meeting is adjourned.